the banks of the river stood running bare. Young Indian brave on the other side of the river stood his lovely Indian maid. Little white girl was of her name, such a lovely sight to see. But their tribes fought with each other, so their love could never be. Running bare, love little white dove, with a love big as the sky. Running bare, love little white dove, with a love that couldn't die. It couldn't swim the raging river, cause the river was too wide. It couldn't reach the little white dove, waiting on the other side. In the moonlight, he could see her throwing kisses across the way.
A great song, Running Bare, here at PNPNetwork.com. And joining us right now from the Rockabilly Hall of Fame, Johnny Preston. Hi, Johnny.
Hi, Mark. How are you?
Good. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure to have you on.
It's a pleasure to be here.
That's great. I just want to make sure that we can hear you all right. I'm having a little bit of trouble here on this end. Can you speak up a little bit?
Sure. Just fine.
Good. Okay. So first of all, I want to say to you, happy birthday.
Oh, thank you.
I know tomorrow is your birthday.
Exactly.
And my son's birthday is today, so.
Oh, right.
Another Leo. Yeah. Of course, he's turning 9. You're getting into your 60s here, huh?
I'll be 61 tomorrow.
Wow.
Yeah.
How you feeling?
I feel like I'm about 17.
You're feeling good, huh?
Oh, yeah. I feel real good.
That's good.
Real good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to believe when you look back at your career that Running Bare was out about 60 years ago. Or 40, I mean.
Yeah. 59, I believe.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It really is. Actually, we recorded it in 58 and with the untimely death of the big bopper and Buddy Holly and Richie Valens. The will had gone into probate because he had minor children, and it was actually released about 8 or 9 months after his death.
Tell us a little bit about your relationship with J.P. Richardson, also known as the Big Papa.
J.P. Before he had his records go into national prominence, he was a local disc jockey here in Beaumont, Texas. And he was a gag DJ. I mean, he was really a funny guy, which, you know, it shows up in most of his records. And he actually, I hate to say the word discovered, but he and his manager, Bill Hall, came out to a club that I was playing one night, and after we finished the job, he asked me, you know, I've got a song I've written, and he said, I think you could do it, and I'd like you to do it. You know, we were just in college and looking for a record contract, and I said, well, certainly, you know, but it was so different from what I had done in the past. I was singing, you know, rock and roll and rhythm and blues, and it kind of took me aback. He said, I promise you, he said, this is a hit song. He said, it may not be a hit song by you, but it's a hit song by someone, and I was the lucky one that got it, you know.
I think it's interesting. You mentioned Bill Hall. Bill and the Big Bopper and George Jones all did the Indian chants on that song.
That's right. Yeah, they were. Well, Bill wound up being my manager, and he had also managed George at an earlier date in his career, and they split friends, but, you know, Bill was just one of the many that couldn't handle George.
Hmm. Now, you signed with Mercury Records around 1959 or so?
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Running Bare was released a little later than that and was a huge hit. What was it like? I mean, here you were, a guy that had a group called The Shades, had some local prominence. What was it like to all of a sudden have a number one hit around the country?
Well, I tell you what, it was very strange because the song actually really took off in St. Louis, Missouri, and it had got into the charts about number, 60 or so, and then it fell out for a week, and then Bill called me one day, and he said, well, we got us a hit, and I said, well, it looks like we're going the other direction. He said, no, he said, a jukebox operator bought 15,000 copies today in St. Louis. He said, it's gone, and Mercury had called him and told him that they were starting to get some action on the thing from their distributors. And after that, it was just went wild. But the change in my life was from just tremendous. You know, we were working like 5 and 6 nights a week, and it meant I actually took the band with us on the road after they lined up some tours, and we went out, and it was really hectic. We actually lived in the cars. We'd make 500 miles a night to another job, and you had to leave after the gig was over and drive a good 12 hours, and show up, clean up, get in the hotel room, get a little sleep, go out and eat, do the show, and it was just one night right after another. So it put me through the paces.
Well, I understand that. I understand after the first year after Cradle of Love came out, too, that you guys were touring England, and you were on a tour with Conway Twitty and Freddie Cannon.
Right. Conway and I and Freddie, we worked for, I can't think of this guy's right name. His first name is Art, but it escapes me. But anyway, we did like, it was almost like vaudeville back then, Mark. We did an afternoon performance and an evening performance, and we played theaters in the town. And we would do like 5 days, Tuesday through Sunday, and do 2 shows a day. And that was really a lot of fun. We really had a good time. And I think Freddie had some engagements back in the States, and he stayed about 2 weeks, but Conway and I stayed, I think, the better part of 2 months.
I understand that when you perform nowadays that occasionally you'll slip in to only make believe as a little salute to Conway Twitty.
Yeah, he was a good friend of mine and a real terrific guy. I like to do it when time permits on the shows, and I work quite a bit in the UK. I usually over there about 4 times a year, and it's kind of become my tribute to him, and the crowd sort of expect me to do it, and it goes over real well. He was a favorite over there.
When we talk about Big Bopper, he's obviously become even more well-known now, and everybody knows from Hee Baby, but they also know him as a person who perished with Buddy Holly and Ritchie Valens. What was that like for you as a protege of his and a friend? Did you feel it was the death of rock and roll, as Don McLean has written?
Well, I didn't feel it was the death of it, but it certainly was a sobering thing on my part as to how you can have a good friend, and then all of a sudden they're just not there anymore. And you know, it was a great shock to me, and I really don't think I got over it the first 2 or 3 months. I mean, it was just unbelievable, because he was, you know, such a part of instrumental in getting me in the music business, and besides, we were friends, and it was a hard time for me, really. And you know, I answered untold thousands of questions about the bopper, and all I can say, he was a great guy and a great talent. And for as few songs as he had written in his life, he was extraordinarily successful.
Yeah, I was going to say that, you know, just like Buddy Holly, everything he touched pretty much turned to gold. And who knows what kind of potential both of those folks had.
They really did.
And Ritchie Valens as well.
Right.
I think that McLean was exaggerating a bit with the day the music died, but certainly a lot of good music did die that day.
It certainly did.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was a big Buddy Holly fan myself, and, you know, we just awaited his releases, because we included those in our jobs every time he had a new record out. We had to know him. He was such a popular figure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people would ask you, do this new Buddy Holly song, you know, so. And it looked like everything you put out was a hit.
Now, how have your record companies treated you over the years in terms of royalties for songs like Running Beer, which I'm sure still sells at this point, even as we speak?
Well, I was lucky. I had a real, you know, professional businessman, Bill Hall, and, you know, Bill later wound up heavy in the publishing business years later, and him and Jack Clement, they sold Bill and Jack and Big Bopper Music, and they had 5 or 6 different companies. And they sold out to Lawrence Welk, a multi-million-dollar deal, and Bill ran Welk Music for a while, part of the deal. And they've done real good, you know, just they did real well in the publishing business. But the record companies treated me great. I was with Mercury, and then we had a better offer to go somewhere after the 5 years were up. But in that, I have to be really honest to tell you that towards the end of the contract, my records weren't selling so great as nobody's was with the Beatles invasion.
Right.
You know, everybody kind of took it on the chin, and people were looking for a place to go. And getting back to Conway Twitty, he told me, he said, "John, we're going to have to do something else." He said, "I'm going country." He said, "I can see we can't last." And, well, my record company, I think I signed next with Imperial or 20th Century Fox. I'm really not sure. But they didn't see things that way. They wanted to keep on plugging, you know. So we did, and we took our lesson the hard way.
Well, you recorded with a number of labels.
Right.
Imperial and Hallway, Cap, a bunch of them.
Right.
And
but I have to say that, you know, Mercury was the mainstay, was probably the biggest label. And they treated me very fairly. I was paid well on my records, and so many people, I hear stories that wind up with nothing.
Exactly.
And are no royalties are very slim. But I've been really fortunate through the years. I've got a number of CDs out now, and I'm with a, it's not a play on words. It's Bayer Family Records out of Germany, and they're probably the biggest. Have the biggest catalog in Europe, and they record, or they actually buy masters, or if you're able, you know, or they'll lease masters and put out some really good product. Everything is digitally mastered now, and they've done a 27 song CD on me and a 34, and they sell real well over there. The people in Europe are tremendous fans, and they don't forget you, you know. And I've gotten some nice royalty checks from these people in the last 4 or 5 years.
And I know that PMPnetwork.com, which we'll be broadcasting this interview, also has a superstore, and there are some Running Beer and Johnny Preston CDs on there available from Beer Family. They're selling them on the Internet as well.
Right.
So that is still around. You know, it's interesting that we were mentioning that you'll be 61 tomorrow. You still tour quite a bit, and you will be this weekend at the Marshfield Fair in Marshfield, Massachusetts, performing with a number of other bands and groups.
That's right.
How does it feel to go out and hit the road? Do you go out quite a bit now?
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll average at least probably 3 to 4 jobs a month, and it's mostly down to weekends now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been out on a few packages, and we've done some oldie station radio shows and their promotions, you know, on the remaining 50s artists that are around.
Sure.
And we stay pretty busy in September. I think there's 12 of us going to be on the Norwegian cruise line, the Norway. We're having a rock and roll show. It's Bobby V and Paul Revere and the Raiders. And
wow.
Myself and Chris Montez and Brian Hyland and Little Eva, Frankie Ford, Gene Chandler, Leslie Gore, Luke Christie. It's going to be a real fun trip.
Wow, that sounds...
And you have so many artists that you only have to work 20 minutes a night, so they get a big show every night.
Wow, that sounds incredible.
Oh, it's great.
Which cruise is that?
That's Norwegian.
Norwegian Lines.
Norwegian Lines, yeah. From the 9th to the 16th. Maybe there's some tickets left.
Yeah, there might be, and check it out on the Internet, folks, if you can get some tickets on that. And that's a great one.
Yes, I
know that Saturday night, in addition to doing the show, you'll also be on my friend George and Eddie's Yesterday's Memory show on WATD.
Right.
Out this way. So, I want to wish you a lot of luck on this thing, and I just want to tell you how much your music has meant to me. When I was a kid, my mother always played Running Beer on the record player. She loved your music, and even to this day, I have a little bongo, and I play to my kids. I go, Running Beer, you know, and the kids love that song. You know, my young children. So the music continues and goes through generation to generation, and that's really the test of quality music.
Right.
One quick question before I let you leave. What do you think of the music that's out nowadays?
Well, I don't listen to a lot of radio for one reason or another. I'm just not, I'm not driving as much. And, you know, most of my trips are flying or what have you, and don't get to hear a lot. But far as the, I always enjoyed listening to the radio in the car. And from what I hear now, I don't understand today's rock and roll music. I really don't. And country seems to be all but forgotten. And it's just kind of like a broad mix. I have grandchildren. As a matter of fact, I have 13 grandchildren. From 20 till, the twins are 20, and my youngest one is 3 years old.
Hmm.
And believe it or not, the older ones tell me they like this soft rock or what have you. But I don't think it leaves there's no indelible mark that stays with you on these songs. I know that I don't completely do all old 50s things on the shows I do. But some of the newer songs, I couldn't go back and just recall it from memory and sing it through,
Yeah.
They just don't have a whole lot of staying power, or they don't for me. Maybe it's my age. Maybe I'm having too many senior moments.
Well, I kind of feel the same way, and I've got slammed for it a few times on the air here, but I mean, I still think that the best music was the late 50s through the 60s through the early 70s.
Yeah, well, it was fun music then.
Yeah.
They had a good, the musicians and everybody had a good time with music then, and it wasn't so mean. Everybody, was ubop shabam and, all catchy little phrases, and it was a lot of fun music.
But there was also some serious stuff, too. I mean, when the Vietnam War, you had the Bob Dylans and the Eve of Destructions and things like that. That really meant a lot to people.
That's right.
Songs like Gina C. and Society's Child that talked about racism.
Sure, and some good message songs.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, we don't see too many of those nowadays.
No, it doesn't look like
that. But it's really a pleasure talking to you, Johnny. And I want to wish you a lot of luck this weekend at the Marshfield Fair and continue touring for many, many years. Stay healthy.
Well, I hope so.
All right, Johnny.
Thank you very much, Mark.
Take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.